Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hill, and by popular demand, I'm delighted again to be able to speak to CEO Steve McQuillan and CFO Stephen King of Avingtraz, a specialist engineering firm supplying niche products and services to the nuclear, defense, industrial, energy, and medical industries. So welcome, gents.
Hello, Paul. Nice to see you again.
Yeah, well, big congrats on this morning's inline FY23 results and positive outlook. But before we sort of dig into the details there, Steve, and I suppose you could just whiz us through the sort of the health of the end markets, given the sort of the macroeconomic backdrop.
Yeah, I mean, it's still uncertain times for lots of people, isn't it, Paul? And certainly we've seen that, and we'll come back to some of the effects that's had on us. But luckily for us, the nature of our markets is such that we're really in a position where a lot of what we do in the end markets we're in, like nuclear or other areas of energy or infrastructure, most of it isn't discretionary. So people have got to go ahead and buy it. So we've certainly seen our end markets holding up pretty well, and our order books are in good shape. No doubt Steve will come to that later, so I won't do that bit now. But we're in pretty good shape. We come into the year in good shape, and we continue to see strong order momentum. So we're pretty happy with the positioning we have.
Good. And what about, can you just talk about sort of the nuclear and the oil and gas sectors? Because obviously, given the Ukraine-Russia crisis, oil and gas seems to have really sort of taken off over the last 12 months. And nuclear in terms of new build, life extension, and also obviously the decommissioning.
Yeah. So the oil and gas, as you say, particularly North Sea, has come good for us in the last 12, 18 months as people have woken up again to refurbing what's there. And also some new activity. I mean, I think that I would still say the new activity is less than ideal, but the refurbishment market has been very good for us. So we've seen, particularly at Hayward Tyler, we've seen a lot of good incoming orders there for aftermarket in particular. And in some other places in the world, but it's particularly a North Sea thing for us. And then secondly, on nuclear, as you say, there's various elements to that. The bits of most interest to us are life extension and decommissioning. The only bit of new build we're interested in is next generation new build rather than conventional new build. I'll come back to that. But the from the point of view of life extension, you know, clearly, as you say, the Ukraine-Russia conflict has caused more people to worry about that and worry about keeping their plants going. So we've seen additional orders coming in North America, in particular, Korea, and also in Europe, more in Europe. We just got an order recently for £2 million for a customer in Italy who we hadn't dealt with for about 30 years, but they're now interested in making sure they've got the right spares and support packages for life extension of a plant there. So we will see more things like that happening as we go forward. And so therefore the life extension market's certainly alive and kicking. Decommissioning, of course, the big thing there is our contract with Sellafield, which continues. And, you know, it's a rolling contract. It'll just go on and on, basically.
How big is that? We'll just remind investors.
Well, the total initial contract size, we moved into phase two, was 70 million. That does get extended by various inflators, et cetera. So it's more than that now. But I mean, we'll be delivering as well, actually. But it's probably, Steve, you might be able to comment. It's probably still roughly the same size as it was when we started, isn't it?
Yes, slightly more than 70 million now.
But there's a big contract. Is there a big contract also coming through?
Yeah, well, eventually, investors are probably fed up with us talking about this, Paul, because we keep saying it's coming, and it never arrives. But eventually, there will be a much bigger contract there for boxes for 900 million quid. And we won't get all of that, as we keep pointing out, but we should get a chunk of it. And in fact, really, now, as far as we can see, there's only two, maybe three possible sources of that product for Sellafield. So, you know, you have to feel fairly confident that when it eventually does come through, we get a good slice of it. But, you know, in the meantime, we've got to keep our nose clean and deliver what Sellafield want. And obviously, merely trying to do that as best we can and put ourselves in contention, good contention for a slice of that pie when it arrives.
Good. Steve, it's also the same on HS2 as well. I mean, there was a program on last night about the increased costs, but inflation, everyone's got inflation. Inflationary increases in there, so it increases in the HS2 contracts more than the 36 million when we started, just because of those inflation factors, added scope, etc., and more exciting things to come.
Yeah. And while we're on the subject of HS2, you know, all the speculation in the press about the Manchester leg being cancelled, etc., that doesn't affect our contract. The contract we've got is for London, Old Oak Common, or Euston to Birmingham, nothing else. So, in fact, there's still upside for Booth in that original contract because there's then more security doors in the access tunnels and in the stations that haven't been agreed yet. So there's potential for upside for Booth even in existing contracts. There's no downside there for Booth as far as we can tell, unless they actually cancel the London to Birmingham piece. And I've certainly seen no speculation about that because that's almost done. So it'd be completely crackers to stop that piece, whatever else happens to the rest of it.
Yeah, well, I hope they don't do that because I live in the Birmingham. I'll be most annoyed. Anything? Have you seen the increased activity in the defence side?
Yeah, we have seen some good things happening in defence because I think we commented to you before, Paul, and to investors that Hayward Tyler in particular had done a really good job for Rolls-Royce on delivery of product for them, for the MOD, and had improved their performance to the extent where they're now kind of top of class rather than when we bought HD, they were bottom of class. Mm. So the team down in Luton have done a cracking job on that. And as a result of that, we've seen some more activity with Rolls and some more orders with them. And we've also been talking to BAE Systems, actually, about potential business with them. So I think there's going to be more business on the defence side for us. And again, as usual, I emphasise nothing that goes bang. We're interested in things that are, you know, pumps, motors, that sort of thing. Nothing that's going to blow up anywhere. So we stay on the proper defence side of it, not the offence side of it.
Good. Okay. Now switching gears, Steve Kay, can you take us through sort of like the gross margins or the margins for this year and, you know, what has been, and likewise the cash generation, and also the sort of the outlook of sort of the revenue visibility for the year ahead in terms of sort of order cover?
Yeah, thanks, Paul. Well, first thing there to say is, look, it's been a few challenges in the year, always is, across all business and engineering, but we beat those expectations again. You probably noticed that the revenue was slightly higher than the city expectations. That's mainly because a bigger increase in OE than AM. You'll see that the aftermarket percentages have slightly slipped back, but that's because of OE's growth, not because of aftermarket. In real terms, they've both grown. Of course, that makes a small change in gross profit and EBITDA profit. So you'll see that we're slightly reduced from last year on gross profit and EBITDA percentages, but obviously gross profit has increased and adjusted EBITDA has increased by 1.3 million. So, you know, you can't always have both those things, but we've managed to, and overall, grow the business by over 10.5% at EBITDA, which is one of the key things we're looking at. And we're going forward because of that, probably growth in OE, and you'd expect that because, you know, people are starting to make purchases on a capital basis rather than just on a preventative maintenance basis. So you'd expect OE to grow probably quicker than aftermarket. Both would be great, but either is great as well. So you'll see that the percentages probably going forward are going to stay about that 14% for EPM and probably about 13% for the PSRE division. On cash, well, we generated a load of cash, about just below 10 million, 9.6 million operating cash inflow. But we spent cash, you know, that's our job, you know, pinpoint, invest, and then exit. So we're in the investment side. So we're investing that cash in particular in the Magnetica side, but also in new bearing technology over at HTI and other improvements around the group. You know, we think it's important to invest that cash also in dividends, et cetera, to give our shareholders some return. It was a smaller working cap outflow, and that's mainly or predominantly, should I say, all to do with the HEVAC acquisition where we bought it into Ormandy, because we didn't buy any working cap with that. We just bought the assets. So you'd expect us to have to increase that slightly, but it was 1.8 in the greater scheme of things, nothing really. And going forward, great order book, very positive as we put out in an earlier RNS, over 92% for this year. Oh, yeah, 92% for this year and over 45% for the following year. Wow. We're in a pretty strong position. And of course, there's other contracts, as we've just discussed, that we're seeking. So hopefully we're in good shape, but things happen in engineering. But it's nice to say, as I said again, to meet those expectations or even slightly beat those expectations.
Yeah. Oh, 92% revenue cover is absolutely fabulous. Now, I'd imagine when you're sort of like only 3 or 4 months into the year, just demonstrates the resilience and the mission critical and safety critical nature of the work that the products that the company sells into its clients. Now, Steve M, can you take us through the exciting news with the acquisition of Adaptix and what you're planning in terms of integrating it, or sort of like, you know, getting the synergies with Magnetica, and then ultimately how you see that sort of play through in the balance sheet in 2 or 3 years' time as the businesses grow?
Yeah. So this is quite a big development, Paul, as you say, because we had been investing in Adaptix, as everybody knows, and we carried on doing that a bit into the early part of this year. But what became apparent was that, you know, Adaptix's cap table was broken, really. Most of their investors couldn't follow their money. And because of the state of the markets, they couldn't really get traction to get money from anybody else, just because of the state, the exact position they're in at the moment in terms of products, sales, etc. More to do with the market than to do with them, unfortunately for them. But that led us to the point where the Avintrans board said, well, look, we're happy to do something to help here, but it can't be that we just keep investing at a notional value and nobody else is going to do that. So basically we went to the Adaptix board and said, look, we'll consider buying the business, but it's on our terms, really, and that's the only way we're prepared to go forward with it. And, you know, obviously people were not necessarily totally happy with that, because clearly what they were going to get was less than they'd like. But they really didn't have an alternative. We said, we're happy for you to find an alternative. That's up to you. If you've got a better alternative, go for it. But they couldn't find one. And so that led us to be buying Adaptix, mainly because of that reason that their funding position, their cap table was broken. And of course, as we said, that's a wider market issue, not just Adaptix. They were also, in our view, spending too much effort on non-core markets. There are a number of opportunities at Adaptix, but we really wanted them to focus 100% on veterinary and orthopedics, which they now are doing. But there was money being spent and working on other things that we didn't think they should do. There's also a nice opportunity in non-destructive evaluation, but that's already quite well developed, so we're happy with that as well. But we didn't want to spend any effort on anything else, really, and now that is the case. And also, you'll know that both for Adaptix and Magnetica, we have an idea that we want to push for pay-per-scan rather than capital sales of the products. And that's great. And we still think that's going to be viable in certain markets in certain places. But there are two issues with that. One is that certain markets, notably UK veterinary surgeons, won't buy that way. They just won't buy it. So you make your position go to zero if you insist on it, point one. And point two, of course, the balance sheet effect of giving away a lot of product initially and then gradually getting the paper scan back causes quite a big effect on cash. So we felt that was unfundable in the short term, at least. And so we've converted that to more like just a straight capital sale with a service and maintenance contract. And that's kind of starting to unlock already the opportunities that we can see shorter term for them in terms of both veterinary and orthopedics. So we're pretty excited about the potential for Adaptix. It's got a lot of sales to go after, a lot of markets to go after. Of course, you know, it's got its 510K in America now for the orthopedic system. Veterinary product can be sold anyway, of course. We're getting some cracking customer reactions. You know, we had one vet say, after he was using the product for a few weeks, does anybody want to buy any secondhand x-ray equipment? Because I don't need all this other stuff now. that sort of thing. So, you know, you can see the potential of it. They've also got a contact in America with one of the leading veterinary schools. They're so impressed with the product, they want to write some research articles about it to help other vets to sort of look at what they could do with it. So there's some really fantastic customer feedback coming there. And then so the priorities now for Adaptix, which obviously we can help with, are twofold, really. One is to build up. We started a small facility in Scotland, which we're now equipping, which they were struggling to do actually because they didn't have the cash to do it. But that facility is going to make the core module that goes in all the products. It's called a flat panel source. It's the array of detectors and emitters of X-ray for the systems. And the guys up there, really, really, really excellent team up there that we've recruited, and we're really impressed by them. And basically what they're going to do is get to a point where they can shell out dozens and then hundreds of these a month, basically, as we look to scale up production. So there's some capex to spend there, not a huge amount actually initially, but there's a few hundred K of capex to spend there and get that up and running. And then that frees up, you know, the ability to make ortho products in particular in volume. We've got an alternative route to make some volume of veterinary products for the short term, but that'll get us going in volume on ortho as well as wet. So that's one key thing. And the second key thing we need to do is obviously get the sales channels up and running. Now we've recruited a really good guy in the US to act as the sales director and the distribution channel manager, because it's going to be a product or a set of products that we sell through distribution rather than building up a huge sales team. So, and that's going to apply in the UK probably as well, in fact, rather than going direct. So we might have some direct salespeople, but mostly be through distribution channels. So that, those are the two big priorities, because we solve those two, then Adaptix is really off and running, and they've got volume sales coming through, which clearly, obviously, we're going to have to support them with cash over the next 12, 18, 24 months. But after that, they should be in a position where they're self-supporting and they start to ramp and make quite a lot of money. And if you do the numbers, we're not prone to exaggeration, as you know, Paul, but if you do the numbers, we can see a path to where Adaptix becomes worth more than Avingtrans. So that's the sort of thing we're looking at here. It's a really big potential.
With Adaptix, then, you've made first sales, have you, in the veterinary? And
yes.
What about the orthopaedic side out in the
States? No, because they need to build up this equipment in Scotland first to start selling orthopaedics. They've got one or two trial units out that are just literally that trial at the moment. But they need the volume in Scotland to be able to put the things together. The assembly and test activity is relatively straightforward. It's all about having this wafer, the silicon wafer, basically putting together in the right way and being able to shell that out in volume. And then the rest of it's relatively straightforward.
And what about the synergies with Magnetica and first sales for Magnetica?
Yeah, so Magnetica, as you say, following a very similar path. So we've got the two teams working nicely in sync, which of course becomes even easier now that we own Adaptix. And the two teams are working really well together. There's lots of synergy in terms of routes to market, technology, regulatory approvals, clinical supervisory boards, all sorts of things are overlapping, and therefore they are collaborating wherever they can. Whether we merge the two together is a question, but that's still an open question for us. We can see pros to that and cons to that, so we're still working our way through that, but that is an open question. It doesn't need to be answered now. In fact, the complete acquisition of Adaptix means we don't have to worry about that too much in the short term. We can take our time about that, so that's a good thing. And then in terms of first sales for Magnetica, well, they're still on target to look at launching the product, soft launching the product at RSNA. It was a big medical imaging show in Chicago in November. Steve and I will be there. And then we expect to get FDA approval in calendar quarter two next year for the product, and we could therefore be selling thereafter. So the Magnetica team are busily, they have all the resources they need basically to put product together, and they're busily building the first systems. And if anybody wants to take a look at the presentations, you'll start to see there's some really good images coming off the initial prototype systems now, and the initial systems, both for Magnetica now as well as Adaptix already had that, but there's a couple of really nice images in the presentation to show the quality of those images that are coming through there.
Yeah. So I guess the commercialization strategy for the Magnetica stuff is pretty much a lift and shift, a blueprint from the Adaptix, if you go through similar sort of distributed channels.
Yes. In fact, the first distributor is almost certainly going to be the same distributor in the US, actually. I'm already well advanced in discussions with those guys to sign them up as a distribution channel. The difference being that the value of the product is a kind of 10x. You know, it's a Adaptix products will sell for less than $100,000, whereas Magnetica's is going to be more like $750,000, something like that. So that's the difference. And whereas the Adaptix team can walk in and set up a product in 20 minutes and say to the customer, try that, and I'll come back next week and see if you want to buy it. Magnetica can't do that because it's more of a setup. It's a more of a system integration. So for Magnetica, we have to qualify the sales and make sure the customer's going to buy it first. But there's ways and means around that. That's a well-trodden path. We're getting really excited interest from customers in Magnetica. And in particular, there's a There's a field base of about 200, 250 old systems that GE used to make, and they're all out of warranty now and obsolete. GE have stopped supporting them. And we've been approached by quite a number of the people who've got those systems saying, can I have one of yours? Because it fits exactly into where I've got this other thing. And it's a perfect upgrade and replacement for that. Right. So that gets us off and running in a way that we didn't really expect. That's really helpful. But then, of course, we've got the orthopedics clinics, the walk-in clinics, fracture clinics, that sort of thing, particularly in America, where there's 28,000 of those things. And they're the main target for Magnetica and Adaptix in the orthopedics side.
Brilliant. If it goes all to success and, you know, sort of like we see growth in the next 2 to 3 years as we anticipate, then what would be sort of the ultimate value creation event sort of further down the pipe in terms of, you know, for the broader Avintraz business?
I think it's almost certainly, that the most likely outcome is IPO of either of them or both together. And we'd see that as being feasible for Adaptix in about 2 years, given the state of the market. And for Magnetica, a bit behind that, unless we join them together, in which case they'd both be at the kind of 2-year-out mark, that sort of timing. And we obviously don't hold us to that exactly. Lots of water to flow under the bridge, but that's the sort of timing we're looking at, we think, given where the market is now. And that obviously will be a big value creation event for Avintraz shareholders and obviously the Adaptix and Magnetica stakeholders as well. So that's what we're planning. You know, in the meantime, as you know, we are an exit-orientated outfit, so if somebody comes along with an interested trade party in the meantime, then we're certainly willing to talk to them about that. Yeah. I would think that's less likely in the next year, just because they'll want to see us getting further forward with volume production first. But it's possible anytime, obviously, and clearly, you know, and we have had initial tentative discussions with a couple of people, but nothing I would call a really hard process bite sort of thing yet. But we'll see. So that could also happen, and we're not against that, although, as I say, I think it's more likely we'll go down the IPO route. And then on IPO, we're still debating whether it's an AIM IPO or a NASDAQ IPO for the two of them. Again, as you know better than we do, there's pros and cons to that as well. But if we go NASDAQ, then there may well be a crossover round before we get to IPO, which is the normal procedure to get the right marquee name on the investor list to persuade everybody that it's a good idea. If we go down the AIM route, we probably don't need to do a crossover round. We can probably run it ourselves and then set it up on AIM.
And have you got the correct sort of amount of resource management team behind those businesses?
Yeah, they're actually really, really good management teams. I'm really impressed by them. Willem Baralt, since he came in as chair of Adaptix, has been excellent. And the rest of the team there have stepped up to the plate. Duncan Stovell, who's running Magnetica, and a really good team with him, Clint Gouveia, those guys, they're doing a really good job, actually, of moving all this forward. And actually, impressively, considering the scale of the teams, you know, Adaptix is only, 80 people, Steve? 70-odd, 80 people? And Magnetica is not even that. It's only about 60 or something now. So, you know, relatively small teams, you know, in more than one geographic location in each case, working through some fantastic system integration work that they're doing to get us to the point where we have really, really amazing sellable products that are exciting the market. So really good work by relatively small teams, as I say.
Brilliant. Well, okay. Well, it certainly sounds exciting stuff over the next 2 to 3 years. Now, Steve Kay, can you just briefly go through the sort of the integration process or how you're getting on with integration with the recent acquisitions of HVAC and S and Slack and Park?
Slack and Park. Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, HVAC, HRS was purchased just around Christmas time. The integration's gone pretty damn well. Does help that they're both located in the Bradford area. One was in Ellen, one was in Bradford. So it was quite easy to consolidate the two units together. That's gone very positively. Some of the management in HVAC added to the management at Normandy. We're getting a very, very strong reaction in the marketplace. Still a lot to go there as we try to convert some of the bigger orders, especially in the plant rooms. But that's gone well. Is there any more integration? There's always a bit more we can do. But, you know, we feel that that's sort of 80, 90% finished. And we should start to see those returns certainly next year. It'll take a bit of time to get up to that 15%, but, you know, it's on the way. Slack and Par, that's one of the more recent acquisitions. That's not like Adaptix. This is a more traditional, if you like, Avintraz play. It was a broken business, came to us via an administrator, It's a very well invested business, but it was a broken business. And broken why? One of the biggest things was it had a very large pension deficit for its DB scheme. And that going through the administrator, that fell away. It had taken on some contracts during COVID that certainly we wouldn't have taken on, but the guy who was running it was doing it for the right reasons to try and keep the workforce going. But unfortunately, he wasn't making much profit. And if you don't make profit and don't generate cash, the inevitable happens. So the inevitable happened. They struggled, but they came to us as we're seen to be people that can save the business. We saved over 100 jobs, which is a real positive point. It's up in Keyworth, near Nottingham. And the management in place are pretty good. They need a bit of coaching. The commercials need to be improved, really. And they need to understand their worth to the business. There's only three, maybe four competitors, and they're mainly Germany, Switzerland. So they're not going to be a low-cost source. So there's no point undercutting it. It's finding the right price. They've got subsidiaries in China and the US, which are very strong, so we can develop them as service centres. It's very much the standard Avingtrans playbook. Mm. We've put it into EPM because it's highly specialised gears, pumps, motors, that sort of thing. It fits very well with the HT brand. We can use the HT sales guys as well, and their sales force and penetration of the market, and hopefully there'll be some crossover there. So we see it as a real positive, but it's going to take a bit of time because it was a broken business. So there was no working cap in the business, so that's going to cost us a little bit as well. But I say it's very well. It's got a lot of capex there, very well deployed. Projects, management, that sort of bits and pieces. So we see it as a real positive. It's a real addition, but it's going to take 18 months or something along those lines, 24 months before we can get it back to 10% margins, because we've got to slowly develop those customers to a higher price. And that's all I'll say, and develop longer term relationships with the customer. So it's an exciting one. It's not the biggest acquisition, but it's quite big for buying it off administrator at just under 5 million, but it's worth it.
Yeah, good.
Pretty much a standard meat and two veg one, that, for us, Paul.
You certainly integrate it and change it and improve and invest in the business, that's for sure. Now, Steve, just in terms of the supply chain, are you seeing that normalizing now from, obviously, because everybody's supply chains are pretty stressed as we came out of the pandemic?
Yeah, that was one thing that didn't help us last year, for sure, Paul, but that was true for everybody. What I'd say is it's definitely getting better, not worse now. Not all the effects have fully subsided. We still have the odd thing, which is still a much longer lead time. And of course, that's either causing us to have some delays in product delivery or whatever, or have longer lead times in product delivery, or hold extra stock to try and get around that. So we're coping okay with it now. It's not getting any worse. It's slowly getting better. In some areas, it has got better. It's sorted, but there's still a number of material categories and whatnot. Castings is an example, and part of the problem there is we don't use that many castings, so we're relatively small volume, so we're at the back of the queue. So that we're still seeing issues there, but again, the way around it is just have to order more and hold some stock, etc. So there's ways and means around it, and we've definitely gone past the worst of it, which is good to see.
Good. And then just finally then, Steve K, in terms of the cash position, how did you see that going forward? Obviously, at the end of the last year, you had 13 million of net cash, so plenty of funds there. You've obviously bought Adaptix. I think you've mentioned it's 8.1 million pounds as a total enterprise value, and you're paying your dividend. How should investors interpret or think about the cash and the balance sheet going forward?
I mean, obviously, moving out of net cash possibly at the end of this FY24 might be a bit of a shock to some of our investors, but they're encouraging us to invest in the business and go faster. So, we think that these two acquisitions are the right acquisitions at the right time. Slack and Power will cost us some cash, but that's probably affordable under current facilities. We're talking with our strategic partners and banks, etc., about further facilities, and more news on that in the due course. They're very supportive, understand the opportunity in Adaptix and Magnetica, and probably when we do look at the 2-year plan, gearing is still only going to be something like 11-12%, so pretty modest for a big organization like ourself, or bigger organization like ourselves, and we can support that. There's no issues with any of the covenants. Everything's in place to support that through for the next 2 years to the inflection point, as Steve said, which is around April 25 for Adaptix, and probably about 6 to 12 months later for Magnetica, when they start becoming cash generative. So funding's in place, but it might, as I say, might be a little bit of a shock for people when we move out of cash, but we've got to use the cash to develop the cash, and the opportunity is fantastic. We're all excited by it.
And Steve, we should say that's a conservative assumption, because that assumes we borrow the money. We could do a placing, Paul, of course, if we felt that was useful at some point, although we're not planning to do that at the moment. And of course, the other thing could happen, which is not unlikely given our track record, is that we sell something and then we get a load of cash coming in from that. So there's multiple ways for us to access the necessary cash. So that's not keeping us awake at night.
Good.
Yeah, but the first challenge is ensuring our partners or strategic partners have those facilities in place for us, and they have, so that's a tick.
Brilliant. And with the recent sort of decline in sterling versus the dollar, does that make any difference at all, Steve Kay, given that the overseas is more than 50% of the business?
Rocky, if I could understand the currency markets, especially when I go on holiday, I buy it at the right time rather than the wrong time. I think in the presentation, there's a summary of our geographical sales. I mean, we're still around about 45% Paul, UK, so there's no translation issue there. We've then got probably about a quarter, 25% in the US selling dollars. So there's no there's no FX issue there apart from the translation, and about 10%, probably 10% in China. So it's all down to translation. And if you look at the average rate for last year, I think it was about 1.21, something along those lines. Okay, we've moved up to 1.3, or we did. We've now sunk back down to 1.22 yesterday, something like that. So, if we start worrying about those small movements, then we're not focusing probably on the right things. If we can forward cover, we will, but there's always a cost there. But at the moment, it's pretty much back to where we were for the full gear last year. So I'm not saying it's not an issue, but we can manage the issue.
Brilliant. And then just finally, then, in terms of future news flow, I guess you've probably got the AGM trading statement coming out at some point in time.
Yeah. I'll just get my crystal ball out again, Paul. I definitely can tell you there will be an AGM, and all the details are there.
And what sort of time is that in the year? Is that
it's November?
November, right? Okay.
Yeah. It's mid November. It's all the details are in the annual review. But other news flow, we'll put that anything out that's strategic. Hopefully, there's some good, exciting orders coming, and we'll try to keep the news flow coming on the medical side. But we do try to keep it at that strategic level rather than hey, we've got a new image. But watch the website and see the new images. I think.
Brilliant. Well, you've certainly whet my appetite hearing more about the healthcare side, and you've got a rock solid core business there going really well, driven by long term secular growth trends in terms of decarbonisation, industrialisation, and energy and all that kind of stuff. So you've got rock solid first business helping you fund on the medical side. So well done, guys, and look forward in touching base for the next trading update, or perhaps earlier.
Maybe.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, Paul.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.